Welcome to Celebrating Whole Health, a program focusing on remembering, reinvigorating, and creating a renaissance of relationship-centered whole person healthcare. Each week, we profile the work of a nurse dedicated to providing compassionate, patient-centered care. I'm your host, Georgiana Donadio, director of the New England School of Whole Health Education in Boston.
Today, my guest is Maureen Spencer. Maureen is a holistic registered certified nurse specialist in the area of infection control and epidemiology. She has 24 years of hospital experience as director or coordinator of infection control. 11 of those years were at the Massachusetts General Hospital, where she started the ongoing Mind-Body Holistic Medicine Group. She is currently the director of infection control at the New England Baptist Hospital. Welcome, Maureen. It's so good to have you on the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, there is, you know, I'm really sorry. I just want the audience to know we interrupted Maureen at the hospital. We called her back, and as is often the case, she was in the middle of something, but the show must go on, and this is live, so we did want to be on time. So thank you so much for making space for us this morning. Maureen, I think the place we want to start with you, because it's totally intriguing and fascinating, that you are the oldest child of 13 children, and at the tender age of 15 years old, something said to you, I really need a tool to deal with, you know, what I'm dealing with as the oldest of such a big family and just life, the harriedness of life in such a large family in general. And you were reading an article in Woman's Day magazine written by Estelle Parsons, who we're not sure if she's the actress or not the actress, but she was definitely a yoga master. And you read this article, and she mentioned that yoga was a positive form of mind control, and you just grabbed onto that and ran with the ball. So please tell us about your beginnings in yoga and holistic medicine and how the evolution brought you to nursing.
That's what happened. I picked up a Woman's Day magazine, and I saw this article about yoga, which I, you know, of course, this is back in 1968. I'm going to say to admit it's been that long, but I started to read it, and it just clicked that this would be a way, when I saw the words mind control, that this would be a way for me to get some control over my life, my mind. It was very difficult being the oldest of the 13 children. I had a lot of responsibilities and, you know, helping my mother out and organizing schedules with, you know, babies and so forth. So I started to practice. There were very few asanas, the postures, that's the Sanskrit name for the posture. So I would do them every day in my room. I'd lock myself up on the third floor where my bedroom was and do handstands and headstands and stretches. And within about a month, I had lost 15 pounds. I went from being a BC student to straight A's from that point on. I started to read very profound books. Everybody couldn't figure out what happened to me and actually thought maybe I was actually taking drugs, because I was actually reading Timothy Leary's books when he was on LSD, because that was the only person who could see was understanding what I was experiencing doing yoga.
Isn't it sad that back then the role models were people like Timothy Leary.
And Aldous Huxley and Albert Camus. I was reading these incredible books, and I was actually working in a nursing home. I started working, snuck into a nursing home when I was 14 and got a job as a nurse's aide, and when I was 17 years old, went into nursing school, and I asked some of the students if they would like to do yoga with me, and that was my first yoga class, and I've been teaching yoga since then. I went on to become the infection control nurse at Kearney Hospital, which was associated with the nursing school I went to, Catherine Labouré, and I taught a community yoga class in the auditorium when I was 20 years old, so I've been teaching yoga a long time.
Well, you have a very fascinating, you know, kind of two-track career, because on one hand, you're an RN, you have your master's in education, your BS in nursing science, you've taken an incredible amount of continuing education courses, so you have this very, you know, classical didactic training. Right. And on the other hand, you have an enormously diverse holistic background and training. So, you know, when you, we know that when you first came out of nursing school, way back when, and you know, don't you just hate to say way back when, you were going into a very kind of black and white area, you know, infection control and, you know, microbes and, you know, it was very specific and you know, very hands-on. And you were balancing that with this whole other way of being and living. So way back when, you were a pioneer and probably didn't even know it at that time. Talk to us about the work that you did at MGH and the work that you did at the Veterans and the Kearney, because you are, I know that you are considered to be a premier infection control and epidemiology specialist in the area, and that's no small feat here in Boston. So tell us about that work that you were doing and how that led to the larger evolution to you starting the Mind-Body Holistic Medicine Center at MGH.
Well, back in, like you said, I almost have like two split personalities. This is infection control nurse. I actually worked in a microbiology lab through nursing school. So I worked in a nursing home, and then I got this job in microbiology at Boston City, and I fell absolutely in love with the invisible concept of these microbes that could cause these illnesses. So from day one, I just always wanted to be an infection control nurse and went to the CDC and got trained when I was 20. And so Kearney Hospital hired me because it was a brand new position that the Joint Commission was requiring to have infection control nurses in 1973. So that's how I actually got into the field. And I was a neophyte. I mean, I didn't understand nursing, but I really knew my microbes, so people would listen to me because nobody else had the depth of microbes that could cause these illnesses. So from day one, I just always wanted to be an infection control nurse and went to the CDC and got trained when I was 20. And so Kearney Hospital hired me because it was a brand new position that the Joint Commission was requiring to have infection control nurses in 1973. So that's how I actually got into the field. And I was a neophyte. I mean, I didn't understand nursing, but I really knew my microbes, so people would listen to me because nobody else had the depth of understanding that I had. So I was one of the first 50 infection control nurses in New England, and we were the first area of the country to set up a chapter that then went on to influence a national organization and a national certification exam. So we were the pioneers. And there was a group called the Dirty Dozen of infection control nurses really the whole practice in the country. So from that point on, I got very involved with the local chapter of APIC. It's called the Association for Practitioners in Infection Control. And then I went on to the VA, which was in West Roxbury, Massachusetts, spinal cord and open heart surgery were their two specialties. And that was through the 80s. I got very involved with wound healing. So I started to do all these occlusive wound healing studies because we didn't have wound care nurses back then. They came later that they got hired. So a lot of infection control nurses, if there was an interest, would start to look at new techniques where if you sealed over the wound, you would find that the granulocytes and the white blood cells would actually heal the wound if you left it alone, if you weren't constantly debriding it and wounding it and hurting it. So, you know, just sort of the story will make sense in a moment. So that was through my 80s, and then I moved on to Mass General in 1985, mid-80s, and I set up a mind-body medicine group there in the early 90s. So most of my focus through the 90s was on mind-body medicine and this whole concept of psycho-neuro-immunology and the influence of every thought, feeling, and emotion, and documented research that shows it affects your immune system, your endocrine system, and your nervous system. And so then I went on to become an energy healer in 1993, became a Reiki practitioner, and started to dabble in that. I didn't really understand it. I'll be honest with you, I didn't believe it. I was very skeptical that there was such a thing as energy that you could run from your hands and influence a person's outcome. And I saw it firsthand with my younger sister, who got diagnosed with stomach cancer and had a two-month diagnosis to live, and I saw her live 2.5 years as an influence of doing energy work on her, which is really unconditional love is what we're passing. So then what happened, that was through the 90s, I started to get into more of the energy medicine. And in 1996, when Mass General was merging with the Brigham, they had to downsize a lot of mid-management positions, and my position got eliminated with a lot of nurse managers and ambulatory care. So at that point, I was already into Reiki. My sister had passed away. I really understood energy now, and I realized that I was being pulled out, that this was my guide's way of saying, you really need to take your knowledge and go out into the community. So a year later, I opened up my yoga healing center called Finding Inner Peace, and I've been working with that for 6 years. And something told me this year, it just a gut feeling that I needed to get back into healthcare, that I really needed to bring what I've learned as a full-time energy healer, which is very rare, and a full-time yoga teacher, that I needed to bring some of these concepts into healthcare to really make them see that there's a whole other way we can integrate, complement the care, that what they're working on curing and what we're working on is healing and how we can bring this in. So I went into infection control because, it, as you said, it's credentialed. I'm respected. I do know what I'm doing. So they'll listen to me and realize I'm not some kind of wacko that they're not going to listen to. And it's I've just been in this position just, you know, a short period of time, but already there are people who have tried some of the things I've mentioned. We're using aromatherapy in the office to clear the space, and special music is played. I'm already establishing a different way of working, just my own work environment with the people I work with. And hopefully, you know, I'll influence some of that on the nursing units and so forth. But so well, there's my life story. I go from infection control, which is about anger and arrogance. If you look in Louise Hay book, her book on body symbology, if you look up infection, says it's arrogance and anger. And so for 23 years, I chased around arrogance and anger in healthcare. And I look back on my life thinking, wait, well, who are you kidding? It was about you. I resonated with that job because of all the anger in my childhood that we grew up with, all of us, you know, trying to get a slice of our parents' love, you know, and recognition. And then I go into wound healing in the 80s. Then I go into mind-body medicine in the 90s as my mind and body start to come together. And then I go into energy medicine in the 2000s. So it's been a full circle for me that I could see that I needed to do that journey for me to get to where I'm at now.
Right. Well, Maureen, you have given us the lightning tour of your life, and I've had the pleasure of knowing you since 1993, and we met as a result of your historical work creating the Mind-Body Medicine Group at MGH. And what we're going to do when we come back from a break in just about a moment is we're going to go back over and break down into smaller bites.
Yep.
So that people can have the real pleasure of hearing a lot of the information that you have about understanding these modalities, these holistic modalities. And also, I think we all are going to get very excited at the idea that you are a person who has a mission to introduce very lovingly, in a very balanced way, the alternative approach to integrated, really integrated, so that we're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater, integrated care in a very very solid medical environment here in the New England area. And I think for all of us in holistic care, it's very exciting to have you out there doing that. And, you know, we're all very, I think, indebted to nurses like yourself, who back in 1993, when it was considered to be a witch hunt, we know that, you were right there at the bastion, and you were making changes. And so we can, you know, really celebrate today your work and your life, and we're going to do that in smaller bites so that we can get the details. We're going to take a 2-minute break. When we come back, we're going to put you under the microscope, Maureen. We're going to ask you a lot of these probing questions, no pun intended here, but thank you so much for sharing, and we'll be back in 2 minutes to do some more.
I'm coming to get you!
Kids, it's getting dark.
Okay. Hi, I'm Lois. I'm a real true life mother of 5, and I'd like to tell you about a cause that I've spent nearly the last 4 years ignoring, the futures of kids in my community. How do I do it? Oh, it's easy. I just don't show my support for after school programs. And here's the best part. It takes absolutely no effort. All you have to do is sit there, in your car, in your home, wherever it's most convenient to do nothing. After-school programs are available in less than a third of the schools in the U.S., and my indifference is helping to ensure that they'll get even less funding. Hey, we all know what that means. Less chances for kids to grow and learn. Right, kid?
Right, Mom.
So won't you please join me in ignoring children everywhere by not calling 1-866-KIDS-TODAY or not logging on to afterschoolnow.org.
After-school programs. Ignore them and they'll go away. A public service message brought to you by the After-School Alliance, the Moth Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Hi. I can't come to the phone right now because I'm abusing my children, not just verbally, but physically. I'll get back to you.
If only child abuse were this easy to recognize. If you even suspect abuse, call Child Help USA at 1-800-4-A-CHILD. We've helped millions of people help millions of children. All calls are anonymous and confidential. So call 1-800-422-4453. Child Help USA. Trust your instincts. A public service message brought to you by Child Help USA and the Ad Council.
And we're back. Welcome back to Celebrating Whole Health. This program focuses on reinvigorating, remembering, and creating a renaissance of relationship-centered whole person care. I'm your host, Georgiana Donadio, and today we are speaking to Maureen Spencer, who is the Director of Infection Control at the New England Baptist Hospital here in Boston. Maureen, before the break, you were giving us the whirlwind tour of your incredible life, both in medicine and alternative or complementary health care. And I promise that when we came back from the break, what we want to do is want to break it down a bit, because fascinating. And I think that you are a wonderful example of what so many of us experience in the healing arts and in the healthcare profession. You're a person who has two tracks. You're a highly skilled, highly trained, and highly educated individual who works in what you refer to as left side brain work, the computer mind, you know, dealing with technology and specifics. Everything's very black and white. And on the other hand, you know, quite by accident, if you will, at a very early age, you got into the practice of yoga, which you did, you know, regularly and daily from the time you were 15 years old. And even though you were a doer, a practicer, someone who was, you know, evidencing the changes of yoga in your life, you shared with us that 25 years after all of this began in your nursing career, you were still very skeptical. You had 25 years of health care under your belt, and you were very skeptical of the idea of energy healing when your sister was diagnosed in 1993. So you have to share with us, if you would be good enough, what was going through your mind all this time when you were practicing yoga and you were dealing with the microbes, and somehow they hadn't come together yet.
No, it's made me really understand, it's sort of be able to understand why complementary therapies are having a hard time getting integrated in. I'll explain in a moment. Back in 1993, I started a mind-body medicine group the month after Dave Eisenberg published in the New England Journal of Medicine that first article about the amount of money paid out of pocket, out of the healthcare system, that was being diverted to complementary therapies. And it just was amazing. People just could not believe the statistic that it was almost more than all inpatient hospitalization costs that people were going on in those years, in the early 90s. Now it's so much more. And this is what the hospitals are now looking at. Look at how much money is being spent out of pocket outside our institutions for this complementary care. It also followed the Bill Moyers series, the mind-body series that he had on PBS. So I started a group. I put a feeler out there, and I had 25 healthcare workers when I put out an email saying, would anybody like to get together at lunch and explore the topic of mind-body medicine?
Yes, but I want to ask you, why did you, who was skeptical,
yep,
you who, you know, have this left-sided brain, what was it that brought you to feel the need or the urgency to develop a group like this in the middle of this incredible medical institution?
Well, I went to a program in 1990 at the Lafayette Hotel in Boston. 700 people were there. A lot of them were patients with cancer. And Norm Cousins was still alive. Deepak Chopra was there. There was all the top, you know, energy medicine people, and Christine Northrup, and they're giving all these lectures, and I'm sitting there going, wait a minute, and I'm seeing all this research, you know, and I thought, we don't know anything about this. The theories are lying, which I knew they weren't. But, you know, I remember my own fight-or-flight response. Part of me wanted to retreat and say, forget it, they're just a bunch of wackos. Or the other was like, wait a minute, if they know this, how come we don't know that? And that was the tact I took. I went back to the hospital and said, you know, we really should be getting into this mind-body stuff. And so I tried to find different routes to get the hospital to pay attention to it. In the meantime, when I set up the mind-body medicine group, there, you know, it was very credentialed people that came to this committee, the head of the OR, the head of human resources, my boss, the hospital epidemiologist, and we started this group. And what happened when we started to set up the lectures, I got a phone call from an employee at Mass General, Ronnie Schaefer, who said, I do Reiki. Would you like me to give a talk on Reiki? And I said, well, explain to me what it is. And she said, well, it's the laying of the hands. And I said, well, where are you going to lay them? And she said, don't lay them all over your body and on chakras. And I said, well, why? Why would you lay your hands on somebody's body? I just remember my body thinking, you got to be kidding. You're going to touch me? You know, and she said, now you have to understand, coming from that childhood, I was not nurtured or touched. I really did not understand that. And I'm serious. I mean, even having, you know, in a marriage, you could not accept love, could not accept somebody wanting to take care of me and wouldn't allow it. You know, that's a control freak and a perfectionist and, you know, just super sensitive person who just cannot accept another person's love. So the thought of a woman touching me, because my mother was just too busy with all the kids, it just floored me. I remember just getting really scared. And this little voice in the background said, try it. You've got to try it. You know, if you're going to run this committee, you've got to practice what you preach. So I said to her, oh, okay, I guess we can do it. And I said, but you know, I live on the South Shore. And she said, oh, my goodness, I do too. I went, oh, dear. I said, well, I live in this little town called Abington. Oh, my goodness, I just made a house and, you know, built a house in Abington. And it was like I couldn't get rid of her. And I said, okay, all right, I'll go. I got on that table, and it changed my life. I could not explain or understand what I felt, that yoga and meditation on my own with little Maureen in her own little world had never, ever felt. I then, from that point, knew Kundalini. I knew what the energy was. I felt the electricity. I felt the warmth. I felt so nurtured. I felt so in love with her. I, you know, just couldn't understand how she just did this. It was just amazing, the array of feelings that went through me. So I then understood, by I had to get on that table to do it. So it is not the kind of thing where you can give a lecture and you can get up and talk about energy medicine or Reiki and try to make a person understand it from an intellectual point of view through the left side of the brain. It's experiential. It's the right side of the brain. And that's what I've come to realize, is that in order for us to integrate this into healthcare, we really have got to get things set up where we're experientially allowing doctors and nurses to feel loved. So that's the focus of that group that I started to take. We actually started to offer yoga classes for employees and Tai Chi and karate classes, meditation groups. This is at Mass General. Mm-hmm. I set up a Reiki clinic, Reiki training. A group of nurses had a therapeutic touch task force, which is still going on at the hospital. In fact, they're writing a Reiki procedure right now because they asked me to review it. I got the board of registration in nursing. I helped influence them to get an advisory ruling on complementary therapies, which said that our nursing practice in Massachusetts covers Reiki, therapeutic touch, shiatsu, massage, aromatherapy, reflexology, music therapy.
We had Janice Gagnon-War on yesterday, and she was sharing with us, and we were sharing that landmark legislation. That is fabulous, and congratulations to you, too. I know we talked about the group of nurses, all of you who did such an extraordinary job in passing that, Maureen. But I have a technical question for you. I want to know if this is an actual, if this is an actual terminology that is used. Is wacko a really specific term?
I'm telling you that I have been called a wacko, a witch. I've had born again literature put on my yoga center threatening me. I mean, we come up against a lot of fear, and they really think that we're not speaking the truth, that we're making this up, and that we've kind of lost our minds, and we're a little wacky, yeah.
Well, this is one of the things that you had said. You said you wanted to talk about why there's been, why there's been reluctance to mainstream, although I'm sure, and you are very aware of the fact, this is 2000 and something, and we see in so many hospitals, and we have nurses on this show who are involved in the hospital programs with Reiki and energy healing and classes of every kind. So we do know that there's a real moving in that direction. Yeah. But you mentioned something during one of our conversations, and you said, it's very interesting to me that yoga is one of the modalities that is rarely included in the kind of a panoply of alternative options that are given to people. And you wanted to talk about that. We've got about 2 minutes before the break, so I'd like you to introduce that topic, and then when we come back, let's talk about, the genesis of where yoga comes from and what is required to really practice yoga well. So if you'd give us that introduction before the break.
Sure. It's just an observation that I've had. I've gone to Harvard Medical School twice. They have a complementary therapy program. Just looking at the texts that come out, Vibrational Medicine by Dr. Richard Gerber, and the book Complementary and Alternative Medicine, a research-based approach that has come out by Mosby, none of them really get into yoga. I thought it was kind of interesting. Chinese medicine with the needles and the herbs that they use and some of the other kinds of techniques that involve chiropractic with manipulations and guided imageries and so forth, but not yoga. And I think one of my thoughts are that yoga, most people think of it as the asana practice, the postures, and the daily discipline of the tapas, the burn, that you really work to get your spirit to the highest vibration with this practice of meditation, breathing, and yoga posturing. I think that's why. I think that it requires a lot of dedication, a lot of work on a physical level, and that's what a lot of Americans are just not, even those in complementary therapies, a lot of the energy healers, they very often are the most loving people and have wonderful hands that will nurture you. But sometimes when you look at, are they any different than the healthcare workers not taking care of themselves? I see this constantly with my yoga teacher training program and my Reiki and energy healing program. The hardest thing I have is to drill through these practitioners to take care of yourself, do your own practice, go and get your own healing, have somebody take care of you. And so that might be why. That's one of the observations that I think
it's a very good observation, and
yeah,
it's something that we do hear repeated, especially by holistic nurses. We, you know, speak to a lot of members of AHNA, and they talk about the foundational philosophy of AHNA, and self-care is very much a big part of that. When we come back, we want to talk specifically to, I mean, you've been a yoga teacher for a very long time, and you teach people things that they can practice on others. But we want to separate those two issues out when we come back, because you have experience in both of them, a great deal of experience in practicing self-care as well as seeing and observing and teaching people how to practice or treat or do for others. So don't go away. We're going to be back in 2 minutes, and we'll continue this conversation.
What do you get when you cross a ballerina with an insomniac? Someone who'll dance the night away. And that's what they're doing at a dance-a-thon put together by dancers and their community coalition to raise money for kids' after-school programs. And what do you get when people bring their groups together? Healthier, drug-free communities, especially for kids. So if you're involved with a group, contact your community coalition at healthyourcommunity.org or 877-KIDS-313. Because you get more when you get together. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
Each night, thousands of kids in America are sent to bed without dinner. Not because they did anything wrong, but because many families don't have enough money to pay the bills and buy food. The simple fact is, 1 in 5 kids in America faces hunger. You can help by calling 1-800-FEED-KIDS or by visiting feedingchildrenbetter.org. Hunger, a choice no one should have to make. A public service message brought to you by America's Second Harvest, Feeding Children Better, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. We are talking to Maureen Spencer, who is the Director of Infection Control at the New England Baptist Hospital. She is also a yoga teacher and has been practicing yoga for many, many years. And before the break, we're talking to Maureen about the reality that there's a difference between complementary and alternative practices that you have someone do something to you, like chiropractic, acupuncture, Reiki, or a modality such as yoga, which no one can do to you. It's something that you need to practice and you need to do for yourself, by yourself. And Maureen had made the observation that it's very interesting when you look at a lot of the books that are published about energy work and explaining the science and what have you, that yoga seems to be bypassed. And the comment was because it isn't a to-do practice. Maureen, why don't you speak to that? Because I know you teach to-do practices, and you practice yoga, which is very much about self-care. So if we could hear your thoughts and experience about those two things.
Well, yoga is a brilliant model for health. It's a science of health. A lot of people confuse it with an organized religious path to God, but this is a science, and it has many different spokes. If you imagine in the center the word yoga, which in Sanskrit means to join, to yoke the mind and body. And the Yoga Sutras, those are aphorisms of thoughts, were written by Patanjali thousands of years ago, way before Christianity and Buddhism. And, you know, these texts kind of laid out a format for being able to control the mind with certain practices that you would do. And if you did them, you would develop what are called higher sense perceptions. You would actually very keenly develop your sensory perceptions of thought and feeling and I mean a sense of touch and taste and vision and so forth. And what happens is that after you develop all of that, the sutras recommend that you surrender them and that you just sit in sort of a contented state, that you really don't want your ego to kind of get wrapped around you being clairvoyant and seeing things or clairaudient and hearing things. And you achieve these powers only to then surrender them so that you sit in the contentment of being in the Buddhi, being the enlightened one. So that's how the book starts. You start out by first studying what is the mind and what are the mind states that we have. How does the mind work? Then the second book goes into what are the practices for you to learn how to control your mind. And if you cease the fluctuations of your mind, if you can go into complete silence and not one thought, feeling, emotion, or sensation or image comes through, that the goal of that practice is that is where the vibration of what we call God is, that you're sitting in this complete void of energy and experiencing it without thinking about it or trying to talk about it or explain it. And it's only when you come out of it that you actually knew you were in it, that you reflect on it with awe, that you were in a vibration of, in yoga they call it the shabda, a sound current. It's a particular sound that we all have, that each comes into our cells and replicates as our spirit, what might be called the Holy Spirit. So this whole system has a practice for physical called Hatha Yoga, which means Ha means sun, Tha means moon, sun and moon practice, that you balance the right and your left side of your body. And so the male side of our body is our right side, meaning the sun side, and the left side is female. And then we have a branch of yoga called Bhakti Yoga, which is devotion to love, that you love everyone, you accept them, and you, like metta, loving kindness, you just see the beautiful divine in every human being that comes to the earth. And then there's Kama Yoga, which is selfless service, that you give of yourself to what you put out is what you get back. You give out selfless service. So, for instance, I run a free Reiki clinic once a month, and I also do not charge when I see people in the hospital, when I am going in for births, or when I am passing somebody on. That's my Kama Yoga, that I give that to society, to this person, that I should take care of them in that kind of a state, and not have a monetary incentive built into it. And so it goes on. There's, you know, Tantra Yoga and Mantra Yoga, which deals with sound. And then there's Kundalini Yoga, which deals with the chakras and the vibrations. It is so brilliant. And I train yoga teachers, but we start with the basic principles to yoga, what are called the yamas. Nonviolence, that we honor nonviolence, non-stealing, non-lying, continence and monogamy, and non-hoarding. So that non-attachment, that would be. And those are the precepts, the moral precepts to yoga. And from that point on, all the practices are so that you can live that kind of life, that you would be nonviolent and you don't lie and you don't steal people's time or people's belongings and you're not promiscuous and you're not hoarding and collecting and just, you know, getting caught up in money and materialism. So many people don't understand that there's those yamas are actually, because they were thousands of years before a lot of the newer organized paths to God and religion, are the basis to moral precepts for man. You know, one of the first written texts that actually described it. So I'm always in awe. Each week that I train yoga teachers, this is something else that comes up that you learn from these ancient texts that help you become the best person while you're here on the short journey. You're down here for this short period of time on the earth. And I just get such joy out of seeing people wake up. What I mean by just all of a sudden these ahas, we call them pramana, direct perception, that they see their ego, you know, the higher self, sees the ego, the lower self. And that's what yoga is about, is to develop this person's strength in their higher self, their connection to what would be God, the vibration of God. And it's through physical, through the hatha yoga, the postures, through the meditation practices, learning to shut off the mind. And it's through the breathing that you learn how to actually move your Holy Spirit, your whole breath in and out, and have it as free as can be so that you are a free spirit. And I've just never gotten tired of doing it, studying it. I've been doing it, like I said, since I was 15. I grew up with it. I think it's why somebody like me, the oldest of 15 children, 13 children, could move into the professional career track that I took, that I always had my yoga that kept me balanced, emotionally balanced.
Your journey is remarkable for many, many different reasons.
Yeah, and I think that's why I bought my... You know, my children I've introduced to yoga. I have 5 children, but I don't demand that they do it. If, you know, one of them is very much into yoga and probably end up being a yoga teacher, my 12-year-old Brianna. But, you know, I just, my children have been raised energetically, understanding these concepts, and they're treated energetically with those five principles. You know, we honor in our household nonviolence and non-stealing, non-lying. It's just a wonderful way to raise children using the model. It's because it's not a religion, it's a model. It's a way of living.
I couldn't agree with you more about yoga. One of the things that we recommend in our practice is to all of our patients to look into a practice, and one of those practices that is highlighted is yoga. I think it's a wonderful system, but what is difficult about it is that, yes, it calls us, it's just like any spiritual practice, it calls us to be very responsible and have tremendous integrity, not only to the way we treat others, but the way we treat ourselves. And so many of us, especially healers, are walking around wounded, and we talked about that yesterday with Janice. And so it becomes incredibly important, I think, to hear the words that you're saying, and you so beautifully laid out yoga for us and described, you know, the benefit of it and the totality of how it can serve us individually and collectively. You touched upon the four mind states, and I know I was fascinated by your discussion of it, and I think the audience would love to hear it. Would you share again with us the different levels or the four states that we enter as we progress in our consciousness?
Right. There's four. It's interesting. In Patanjali's book one, which is on contemplation, it's like actually reflecting back on things that happen and how you reacted to them, that you cultivate, you garden four different mind states. One of them is loving kindness, that you actually, when somebody is unfriendly or somebody is acting in a certain way, that you cultivate friendliness, that loving kindness, that you give them love back. And I'll throw them off. It will discharge their energy because it takes two to tango. So, you know, it's a very effective technique. It's a technique to control your reaction back to somebody who is trying to put out some negative energy, that you just cultivate friendliness and compassion. So loving kindness is metta, they call it, this practice of metta. The second is then the compassion comes, that if somebody is sad or somebody is sick and somebody's not well, that you cultivate in your own body compassion rather than judgment and criticism. You look at them and realize that they're just energy. They're just energy that's not flowing in their Holy Spirit, so that they're acting out in this way. They're still a divine human being, but you give them compassion. And that helps you. Your body's the one that's going to get the effect of the compassion, and the other person will feel it. And hopefully, they have a choice still with free will to accept it or reject it. But that's the point, is you cultivate the compassion. So that would be the second stage of what's called karuna. Then the third stage is what's called mukita, and that is non-attachment, that you start to be able to detach at what's called if wickedness, if somebody's very negative and they come to you, or they're very wicked, that you have two choices. You detach, you pull away, and or the other one is equal force to equal force. So you might say, well, that sounds like the fight or flight response. The difference is it's a very conscious choice. It's not a physiologic response to a stressor and acting as an animal would in a fight or flight response. This is a very conscious choice to say, you know, I don't need to listen to this. I don't need to be in this situation. I'm leaving. Or I am coming up to this force with my own equal force, consciously with my heart. I'm speaking from my heart, not my mind. When you speak from your mind, it's mental. It's judgmental. It comes from, and people feel that. But if you speak from your heart, from your own truth, that's a whole different feeling. And yet you then spoke your truth. You're honoring yourself. So this is what we do in yoga. We try to teach our teachers so that they are living examples when they go out to be a yoga teacher, meaning you have your mind and body connected. It's not about going out and teaching people how to get into the triangle and the warrior and the down dog and the cat and all these different yoga postures that are interesting. They mimic nature. You know, the tree pose, the locust, the butterfly. You know, all the postures that we do are based on nature, the observation of nature by the ancient sages and the ancient gurus who watched the way that different kinds of life forms on the earth moved and had a spirit. That's why they honor, vegetarianism and honor, like, all living things have a spirit, and that you would not kill them, you would not eat a cow, you know, and so on and so forth. That's where it comes from, that they honored everything that moves, articulates, and has wave frequencies in it.
Maureen, we want to hear so much more from you, but we're going to take a short break. When we come back, want to talk about exactly what you are sharing with us, how the ancients had their own research. It was called observation.
Yeah.
And how this wonderful, intuitive, and practical research has been passed down over the centuries. Do want to get back to the discussion about the fourth stage of the yoga mind state, because you were sharing with me in our previous conversations about how yoga is actually being recommended medically for fibromyalgia, high blood pressure, arthritis, and back problems, and how so much of this is about learning learning how to be with those mind states. So when we come back in 2 minutes, we're going to hopefully go over that discussion. There's so much to say. You are just such a wealth of information. I wish we could plug in and download the enormous and wonderful information that you have about yoga and so many other things, but we'll be right back to share more of that.
Hey, you're the new tech support guy, right?
Right. Dave Lewis, man. Good to meet you.
You too. You know, the way these things crash, you're going to be busy.
Well, that's all right. Hey, listen, I'm going to hit the men's room, okay? I'll see you around, I'm sure.
Okay, but you can't go in there.
Executive washroom, huh?
No. Can't you see the sign? That bathroom is whites only.
Whites only?
Yeah. Just 1 second. Hey, Karen, where's that colored bathroom again? If you go through that exit, there's a staircase. I think it's up on 3.
Okay. Thanks.
Imagine what America would be like today if Martin Luther King never had a dream. It's time to honor his memory. Visit buildthedream.org to learn about the Martin Luther King National Memorial Project in Washington, D.C. You can help him stand among our nation's heroes and preserve his message of hope for future generations. Visit buildthedream.org. Together, we can help make history.
This is Brad Paisley. A great song has a way of tugging at your heart, but nothing tugs at my heart like the kids who are being helped at Shriners Hospitals. I know firsthand because I'm a Shriner. The Shriners provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care to kids, totally free of charge, and they combine that care with progressive research and innovative teaching programs. There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area. For more information, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Welcome back. We are talking to Maureen Spencer, who is the Director of Infection Control at the New England Baptist Hospital. She is also a yoga teacher and has been practicing yoga for many, many years. Yoga, of course, is dedicated to the whole energetics of the human experience. And you had spoken with me earlier about how even within the medical realm today, things such as fibromyalgia, high blood pressure, especially, I know, anxiety disorders, there's a lot of direction in recommending to patients that they begin the practice of yoga, even though it's difficult for them to sustain because of the mind states and things that you were talking about. It's definitely a new direction for medicine. And if you could touch again on that fourth mind state, because I know from personal and professional experience, most of us kind of get into trouble when we're confronted with situations that are meeting us in this rather negative energetic way. And that's where we sometimes have a great day, but we fall apart when we're coming up against what you called the wickedness of the world. So if I know that's a big conversation, but we've got at least 10 minutes for you to run with the ball. So if you would.
Well, in the ancient text, going back again, they have a description of what are called the koshas, K-O-S-H-A, which are energy sheets. Okay, these are layers around the body. And the anamaya kosha is your physical sheet. And they call it, and ana means food in Sanskrit. What do you feed your physical matter? What do you see? What are you feeding in through your eyes? What are you listening to for music or voices? What are you smelling? What are you tasting? What are you bringing into your body for food? What environment you in? The whole thing. The second is the pranamaya kosha. It's the energy sheet. And it says that based on what you take in, it's going to affect your breath. Your prana, your life force, is going to move according to what you're pulling into the system, think of it as a computer, all the files that you're taking in, and how is that computer going to work? Is it going to get stagnant and run down, or is it going to be free and moving quickly? And the third is the manamaya kosha, which is the emotional sheet. So they're telling us that our emotions affect our breath, and our breath affects our body, and vice versa, that what we take in affects our breath and then creates emotions. And that's what we call the lower self. Those lower sheets are primarily how most Americans, most people in the world are living, in a lower energetic self in which their emotions are running the show, their anger, their grief, their guilt, their judgments, criticisms, bitterness, envy, whatever, is making their breath very tight, very controlled, very constricted. And then the body looks that way. there's a look to a person who has fibromyalgia, who has arthritis, who has angry heart disease, cardiac disease, and they're hypertense. You know, the words we use a lot of times really kind of illustrate the what we're talking about is the energy of the body. Now, what they don't realize, there's this these two other sheets that are talked about in the ancient texts called the Vijnanamaya Kosha, which is the higher self, and then there's the Anandamaya Kosha, which is the God sheet. So we come from God. We then have a higher self, just like the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. You come in, you have a higher self, then you have a lower self, which manifests itself in the physical realm. Now, if you go into quantum physics, down at the cellular level, beyond the electron charges, are very fine particles we now know scientifically are proven they're there, called quarks and neutrinos. Neutrinos were just discovered last year. Quarks were discovered in early 1990. This is very brand new research. And they show us that they're infinite. It goes beyond the neutrinos. We just don't know what they're called. But we are really space. We're emptiness. So form is emptiness, and emptiness is form. So when you look at your body, it looks very whole. It looks like it's a solid thing, but it's nothing more than waves and particles being held together. Like Einstein said, energy equals matter, M, at the speed of light squared, C squared. So we're pulsing at the speed of light squared, but it's being held in the third dimension. This is where we live, in a third dimension reality. And it's an electromagnetic force on the Earth, and we are pulsing particles. We're just energy. We're just absolutely all energy. And how the energy gets picked up from the universe, it comes in, and it comes into our systems wiring that we have, called meridians, nadis, and chakras, that are described in the ancient Laya yoga text. There's a branch of yoga called Laya, L-A-Y-A, yoga. And that talks about the kundalini and the chakras. And, of course, Chinese medicine refers to the meridians. And there's lots of research, by the way, I have to tell you, that proves both these systems exist. There's squid devices, there's super quantum interference devices that are on the market now that can pick up energy, even what comes out of healers' hands. There's in 1960, there was radioisotope testing that was done on meridians, and they showed up. They were able to prove meridians do exist. So when somebody tells me that this is not real and this is not scientifically based, I stop them and say, you don't know what you're talking about. You know, once you read and you get up, you know, educate on this, then we can have a discussion, but you're showing your ignorance. You really don't know what you're talking about. There's a lot of proof.
Isn't information, Maureen, probably the biggest...
Yes.
The biggest handicap? Just try to imagine if all of the caregivers in the United States, which would be huge, were exposed
exactly.
to the research and the science of all of this. Boy, we would be in a whole different world. But then again, it might have a serious financial ramifications, which is probably one of the influences on that information not getting out. Before we go off the topic, that fourth mind state, which you brought up. I think that for many of us living in the day-to-day world, we can wake up in the morning, we can feel pretty good, you know, we can be feeling compassionate, we can be feeling loving-kindness, we can, you know, pretty much be having a fairly nice day. And then someone will come into our energy field or into our experience, and they're feeling a bit wicked. And they may, for instance, they may cut us off, they may flip us the bird driving, they may do something, something really hurtful to us during the day. And that's where that ability to make a choice of how we're going to react, I think it would be very valuable for you to talk about that fourth state again, because you said we have two choices. One is we can say, you know, I'm going to remove myself from this situation, which is, retreat is a perfectly wonderful option because it is very healthy for both parties. But the second one, which is more fascinating because it actually probably takes a different kind of commitment and maybe a bit of courage to say, I'm going to meet this energy with heart-centered, loving energy. Could you talk about that? Because that's a challenging option, and I know we'd all like to hear about how we can do that.
Well, once you understand the power of the mind, and, you know, for listeners, just getting the book The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, it's a wonderful book that talks about the concept of the mind and the now. When somebody comes up to you and they have their stuff and they're trying to transfer their energy, their anger, grief, whatever, onto you, you have a choice to, as I said, retreat, detach, and move away, or come up to it with equal force. There's a practice, a couple of things I do. I wrap them with the pink light. I look at them, and I wrap them with the pink light. The vibration of pink, just thinking of pink and wrapping that around people, creates an energy grid. that starts to put love out that overpowers fear. All they're manifesting is fear, a variation of fear. I mean, guilt is based on fear. It was learned. Shame is based on fear. Somebody taught you to feel ashamed. Anger is the emotion of fear and sadness.
You said anger is the emotion of?
Fear and sadness.
Fear and sadness.
Mm-hmm. So when people are angry, that's an emotion. Emotion, it wants to move, but it's based, the underlying frequencies are fear and sadness that make a person, because often people, after they've been angry, feel sad and feel very afraid. So if you just start to look at everybody as energy, you realize you have the ability to shift your reaction to them by a technique. So one of the techniques I use called metta, M-E-T-T-A, it's a Buddhist practice of wrapping people and sending out affirmations that ask for peace and ask for loving kindness. You can just shift the energy around a person by just wrapping them with the light. And so, therefore, what they're feeling from you are particles that are very expansive and very free. And what happens is we don't go down to their level. All right, so I stay very high energetically. And my goal is to pull them up into a higher vibration and out of the condensed energy. It's just condensed energy. That's all it is. So we don't have a judgment on it. It's not good or bad. It's just energy. And so if somebody is acting angry, I just look at them and have compassion, because I'm like, what a way to live in such anger. And, you know, and they're all really behind it. They've got fear and sadness. So the best approach I have is to come out with compassion and love. That's going to shift their whole reaction to me.
Isn't that a wonderful tool?
But it works. I'm telling you, it works. I've been teaching people here at the hospital already to go to hospital meetings and wrap the whole group with the light, with pink light.
And amazingly, Maureen, it doesn't. That really isn't
back, tell me it works.
And it's not really very different from so many of the other more contemporary religious practices that talk about treating others as you want to be treated. And I mean, if we really look at all of the historical, ancient, and even more contemporary, although most religions are not so contemporary, but if we look at these philosophies, these tools, what it always says is, really, it doesn't, you know, spell it out, but we are creating thoughts, we're creating energies, we're exchanging intentionality with one another, and isn't that at the core of holistic nursing? Now, this is very difficult to believe, but the hour has almost gone by. We've got a few more minutes left, and we're going to take one more very quick break and come back, and when we do, I mean, there's so many things that we want to talk about with you, and we're going to have you back for sure, because you are also into sound and vibrational music healing. When we come back, if you would touch on that, and then we want your information. Where can people get a hold of you? How can they get a hold of your center? So don't go away. We're going to take 1 minute. We're going to be back, and then please tell us just a bit about the wonderful sound healing work that you're involved with.
I don't want my daughter to be labeled.
Hey, my son was just like I was in school. What's the big deal?
My daughter's just going through a phase. She'll get over it.
Kids with learning difficulties don't need excuses. They need help. Today, there are millions of kids with learning difficulties, and they're struggling in school. But the fact is, a lot of these kids are smart. They just learn differently. So if you're the parent of a child who's struggling to learn, the more you learn, the better off your child will be. If you act now and get the proper help, your child can do well in school and in life. So if you think that there's something wrong, do something right. Now, get help. For free information on how to help your child, visit www.focusonlearning.org, www.focusonlearning.org, or call 1-888-478-MIND. Do it for your child. Do it for yourself. But do it now. A message from the Advertising Council and the Coordinated Campaign for Learning Disabilities.
And we're back. You're listening to Celebrating Whole Health. Maureen, we only have a few minutes left. I could just listen to you talk for hours. You are such a knowledgeable person, and we're so thrilled that you've come today and spoken about this. Now, before you go, we want to know several things. We want to know about your contact information, and also, you are involved in material and projects that have been tested and are being looked into by NASA that has to do with sound, vibration, and healing. If you could give us just an appetizer on that, and first, please give us your contact information.
Okay, well, people can contact me at Finding Inner Peace, which is in Abington, Massachusetts. It's about 20 miles south of Boston, at 781-878-0115. Or they can email me at findinn3n@aol.com. That's actually the best way to get me is through email.
And it's and your website is?
Website is findinginnerpeace.com.
So it's www.findinginnerpeace.com. And tell us a bit, just a bit, because we're going to have you back and we're going to talk about the incredible sound work and energy work that you're doing with music.
Yeah. I'm working with two really profound pieces of equipment. One is called the Cymatron, which you'll actually see on my website, a picture of it. It's a sound table with a dodecahedron, one of the platonic solids. There are five platonic solids that make up all of the universe, so it's really getting into the quantum stuff again. And the client lies on the table, and we actually start to break up the emotional garbage in people, as I call it, baggage that they have, by vibrating sound. And we break up these particles I was talking about earlier, and they start releasing it through their breath and through their movement.
And now this is being, or has been, tested by NASA. I mean, could you tell us a little bit about, you know, the physics and the science that's going on? And then as soon as you're done with that, we're going to say goodbye. But we could just talk forever, Maureen.
Yeah, well, the table itself, this whole concept of working with sound with dodecahedron, there's a whole history of that, of how different investigators have looked at the combination of sacred geometry and sound. And that's not the one that's been done by NASA, but a NASA physician who, you know, actually worked for NASA, has designed a new set of energy discs. They're called music, that puts out a particular frequency, and a necklace that you wear that puts out an opposing frequency to protect us from cell phones and computers. So that's a whole other thing I was introduced to in January. It's a company called Circles of Life, and I've just thought, I flew out to California to meet with them before I kind of put my reputation on the line, and it is just absolutely amazing, the results I'm seeing with that kind of a product. I just think it illustrates that we're in this century, we're going to be seeing more and more of ways in which we can protect ourselves from the technology we've developed. Cell phones are putting out tremendous amounts of electromagnetic fields. A lot of the big screen televisions, people are getting bombarded constantly, and it's affecting the energy field. These things go counterclockwise. Their frequencies are pulling a part of our particles out in the wrong direction. It de-energizes the system, the person's energy system. So I think as time goes on, like I said, sound is going to be one of the most amazing ways that we can work with people to get them back to wholeness, get their body free.
We want you to come back and share with us your incredible wealth of knowledge. You are just an interesting, amazing, brilliant nurse person, and we're thrilled to death that you could be here today and take time out of your busy schedule at the hospital to talk to us. You can reach Maureen at www.findinginnerpeace.com. Thank you so much for being here. And audience, tune in tomorrow, or actually on Monday. I can't believe another week has gone by. We're going to have Kathy Duffy, who is a nurse and herbalist, just amazing, amazing person, who's going to share a lot of her herbal information and expertise with us. Have a wonderful day.